Disruption Zone. Opportunity lives where the status quo dies. Talking to the greatest innovators, disruptors, and off-the-wall inventors we can scrounge up. You laugh, you'll learn, you'll be inspired. Now, here are your hosts, Leland Conway and Cameron Mills.
It's the Disruption Zone. My friend Dr. Charles Pemberton, Global Dimensions Family Therapy. He's a clinical therapist. He joins us now. I want to talk about the mentality that is developing in America of fear and how we might be being primed or conditioned. And certainly there are politicians who are taking advantage of our priming, if you will, to live in fear. Welcome back to the program, sir. How are you?
I am doing well. I'm doing very well from the safety of my home.
By the way, you've got a new podcast out. You want to tell people about it?
I do. I have just started one. Thank you. It is the Dr. P podcast, counseling in 30 minutes or less. And I've got some ideas, you know, so far up there about how some of these things we talk about, like grief and loss and cognitive behavior therapy, are, you know, we can really apply those to this. I talk all the time about, oh, if we had an experiment where we made you stay in your house and think about all, you know, negative thoughts, how would you feel? Oh, we know what that is. It's called COVID-19.
Yeah, that's perfect. I love it. Where can people find your podcast?
It is on a lot of the different fronts. Best place to search is Counseling in 30 Minutes. I know it can be found on iTunes. That's perfect. Probably the most popular one out there. Spotify, yep, as well.
Awesome. Great stuff. So there's been a discussion. I've seen this viral article on Facebook a couple of times. It's actually really thoughtfully written, and the title of it is, Are We Being Primed? And the guy that writes it goes into this sort of dissertation, and again, it's very thoughtfully written, about how we keep hearing these terms, safer at home, or stay home, stay safe, stay home, stay healthy. They're not only coming from our quote-unquote experts and our politicians, they're coming from our municipalities and our local governments. They're coming from our advertisements that we watch on TV. They're coming from celebrities with their little hashtags on Twitter and Instagram. And everything is stay home, stay safe. And it's sort of turned into this this mantra, and it's, how do I put this? I view it as, not that we shouldn't be safe, right? Not that we shouldn't practice, right, social distancing. That's not my point. But the author of this article's point was that we're being conditioned to give over our freedoms with these terms and these mantras, and that, you know, in the last 20 years or so, there's been an enormous amount of progress in the realm of psychology and learning how the human mind works and ways that you can actually condition people to think in certain ways by repeating certain phrases. And there was actually some interesting studies that were done, or some interesting stories that were done early in Obama's administration, that he hired a lot of these people that were deep into this to help with languaging his policies and languaging his regulations, et cetera. And it was he was very effective at it. He was very effective at it on social media in his elections, and he was very effective at it in how he sometimes did policy. Is there anything to this, to what I'm saying?
Absolutely. And I want to start by saying, when we talk about this, I'm not saying that we shouldn't social distance. Right. I don't want to go down that road that, oh, well, you know, it's, but your point of our language becomes our reality is a fundamental point in psychology and in counseling. Mm-hmm. The words we use becomes our self-talk. Things I say out loud are the things that I'm saying in my head.
Right.
And the more I say it in my head, the more I tend to believe it.
Right.
To the point then it becomes what we call a paradigm, a way of thinking that roots to everything else that we do. So absolutely this, and you know, the good politicians, the good business people, all of the ones that we think of, most of those people are good at doing this, mm-hmm, having a way of talking to us, of repeating the same things, understanding our meaning of language, and it becomes, oh, well, they're relating to me. And if they don't relate to me, well, then there's this push of, you know, we call it advertising, mm-hmm, where I get overrun with an idea, and now all of a sudden I hear that in my head all the time.
Right. I think it's contributing to, you know, I don't know if you saw that Kevin James, the actor from Mall Cop and King of Queens, did a hilarious 2-minute short film the other day where they were mocking this sort of snitch ideology that's developed. I just got a copy of the spreadsheet. Somebody did a public records request, and there was a spreadsheet that had all of the complaints on the Kentucky snitch line, you know, the phone number people call to tell on each other. And the complaints are just, it's amazing what people are calling to tell on their neighbors for. And my theory, let me just back up. I've got a little bit of a theory on this, Dr. Pemberton. I don't think that there's some cabal that's trying to control the strings of the world that said, hey, let's release a virus on people and then let's control their minds through this. Like, that's legit conspiracy theory. Go get a tinfoil hat crap right there, right?
Right.
But
right.
I do understand, and I think it's your business to understand, human nature. And human nature is that people in power will take advantage when they see an opportunity. And an incredible opportunity has been granted here because of this viral idea that has been planted in people's heads. And I think we live in a unique time set where, because of social media, this kind of viral ideology being sort of implanted in society, almost worldwide, certainly nationwide, would never have been possible in 1918. It would never have been possible 50 years ago. Social media sets us up for this.
Yes, absolutely. So things that will promote a paradigm, if you will. The things that tend to really help facilitate that are things like professional organizations, dynamic leaders, journals, educators, that idea, government agencies, funding sources. But another one is media outlets and media coverage. And I would argue that in a lot of ways, our social media is just another media coverage. Mm-hmm. And with the idea today that we are all on multiple social media platforms, it's what we wake up to, it's what we go to bed with, it's what we check on our lunch breaks, it's right. all of those things that, yes, that media coverage, not just from the big NBCs and CBSs and Foxes, but that everyday slow trickle of information definitely fosters all of our paradigms, whether we're talking about this or whether we're talking about what the latest style that I'm supposed to wear is. It's that I can't get away from it, and it seems to be everywhere.
Right.
And that's what fosters that paradigm. And so today, this is this idea of, you know, the COVID-19 and what we're supposed to do or what we're not, and how that social pressure, that peer pressure, is being orchestrated.
Right.
Whether you know it's good or bad, peer pressure is peer pressure.
Right. And social media amplifies that, I think, in a way that we've never seen before, because I have friends all across the nation that I would normally, you know, without social media, I wouldn't interact with them except for when I see them or when I call them. Now I interact with people that I don't even know. And even if I don't want to admit it, I have to admit that what I see on social media influences my behavior and my thought processes, which is why
Absolutely.
I should probably limit my time on there.
Absolutely. Or maybe look for competing ideas of what your paradigm is. So rather than getting dropped into the rabbit hole of only looking at things that you agree with, which reinforces your paradigm, so you never are likely to have that paradigm shift because it has become so dominant, expose yourself to other people, other ideas, so that you can really question, well, do I really have that? Is my worldview of this issue the correct issue?
Right.
And so limit, or better, truly expose yourself to both sides.
Right. How big of a factor is, okay, because I feel like America's frozen right now. Like, I feel like we're literally frozen. We're like a panicked deer. If you've ever seen a deer when it gets caught in headlights, or a rabbit when it gets caught in headlights, it just freezes. And I feel like that's America right now. It's like we're so tribalized, and social media amplifies that tribalization. But we're also, there's so much information out there. I could literally make an incredibly compelling case for the fact that there is no virus. And that's not true. But I mean, I could make a case that it's being far overblown, which I think is true. And yet I could also make a case that it's killing everybody that walks outside in the sun, you know, because that information on both sides of that is out there. And people, once you get into your tribal tunnel on social media, you get bombarded with what goes in your tribal tunnel over and over and over and over and over again. There was a comment on one of my Facebook posts the other day. I linked to a website called Hot Air. HotAir.com is a conservative-leaning website that is very critical of President Trump at times. It has multiple different writers. Some are pro-Trump, some are anti-Trump, some are never-Trumpers. It also uses guest topics and guest hosts from the left. In other words, it's a very balanced conservative website. Conservative-leaning, but very balanced. And somebody, a liberal friend of mine on Facebook, would just completely right off the top, I was like, oh, it comes from hotair.com. It's obviously nothing but a Trump site. And I'm like, dude, you don't even know that site, right? We live in our tunnels, and that's where we live, you know?
Right. And I think that as what social media has caused us to do, and this isolation has amped all that up, is we have pulled ourselves in. So now I am less likely to talk to somebody with a different viewpoint. I'm less likely to run into a friend or a family member who disagrees with me, because now I'm isolated in my house. I can really limit all of that. And that, coupled with the fact that even going into this, we became so polarized in so many aspects of our life. You know, anybody that kind of tried to walk that middle ground was shut down because of the sound and how loud either end was. This just played in to all of that, because right now, like I said, I have to actively look for any middle ground. That and the fact that, you know, this is hard to understand. I mean, I have a doctorate, and I still look at these numbers and I'm like, wait a minute. Now, wait, what's the statistics of that? Wait, what was the power of that study?
Right.
What the sample size was. And that means that, oh, well, that's completely irrelevant. And I throw it away. That's hard stuff. But yet our media presents it in this way that oftentimes makes us think we understand it when we don't. You cannot understand a study by reading a headline. And, you know, and that's what oftentimes either our media gives us or we want to believe. Oh, I read the headline. I obviously understand the entire study. And that's the thing that we really have to fight against, is that I'm not necessarily an expert because I understood the headline.
Right.
I'm an expert when I understand all the footnotes. That's the hard part.
That's a really good point. Maybe the real virus attacking America is political tribalism. Because one of the things that I've noticed is, like, going back to what we're saying here, and how come one of the ways that social media is so effective at dividing us, and I think there's an overarching, I'm not trying to blame social media for everything, but I kind of am right now, because it's part of what has sort of caused this culture of fear to erupt and grow. But one of the reasons why it's so divisive is because I can literally go find a scientist who says things that affirm my point of view. Or if you were on the opposite of me, you could go find a scientist who says things that affirm your point of view. In other words, science itself
right
has become politicized and tribalized.
Well, and this is something that anyone who studies basic stats will learn, is that I can create statistics to show my side regardless of the numbers. Mm-hmm. And that's a very scary thing to realize, that even our statistics, even our science, like you said, has been politicized, can be very biased. And we have to be careful not to say, well, see, so the other side is all wrong then. No, maybe I have to realize that my side is just as wrong, And that's a scary place to be, because that means then I lose control. I lose stability.
Right.
You know, one of the things we talk about is in counseling is people have irrational beliefs all over the place. I mean, we're filled with irrational beliefs, mm-hmm. and we have to admit that to ourselves. But that's a scary place to think that the things that I hold true may not always be as true or as accurate as I believe them to be.
Right.
Man, that really starts questioning your worldview. And a lot of people aren't ready to make that leap.
How do we get beyond this? Like, because I said this to somebody earlier that I was talking to, my parents' generation, my grandparents' generation survived World War II and the Great Depression. My generation hasn't had to survive anything. We haven't had to do jack squat. We watched war on TV, and frankly, we watched the biggest terrorist attack in American history on TV, right? In general, my generation and those coming after me have never had to experience anything truly hard as a nation. So then we get social media on top of that, and it allows us to amplify our lives as if we're all the star of our own reality show, and we go on there and complain about how hard our life is because Starbucks was out of pink drinks or whatever. How do we overcome this? Because I actually said this, and I hate saying this, but I feel like this virus has caused me to doubt what I believed about my fellow countrymen. I always thought Americans were tough, independent. At the end of the day, we'd pull together, we'd do what's right. I don't think that's the case anymore. We're splintered. We're all over the place. We're weak. We're whiny. I just it's changed my outlook on my own country.
So I think we have to go back to some of the things that we know worked. And I think we have to go back to that sense of community face to face. We have to go back to really connecting to people. I think we also have to go back to listening to people more so than talking at people. I think if we can all really sit down and listen to what another person is saying before we start putting our argument against it, that is where we will have that saving grace.
Yeah.
My hope is that out of this, and this is something I always say, and I got to work it in, is that not only will we learn how to wash our hands out of this, but maybe we'll learn how to sit down with our families and have a conversation at the dinner table, even if we're mad at one another, even if we don't agree. We can sit down and have a conversation and learn how to handle that discomfort of, I don't agree with you, but I can't get up from the table. Because that's right now, social media is, I can sit down at the table, and if I don't agree with you, it's fine for me to jump up and go to another table. Well, the reality is, real life is not like that. Once I'm sitting at the table, if I just get up and leave, I may not be invited back. So I have to learn how to balance that. And maybe through this, as we're having more meals at home and more, you know, whole families at the dinner table, maybe this generation will learn how to overcome some of that in the reality of, oh, I can't just leave because I don't like it.
Yeah, I don't necessarily share your optimism, but I hope your optimism is correct. And I will say that what you just said actually brought to mind. I just started with a new company, and the CEO, we have these meetings every week, and the CEO talks to us. And about a week ago, every time he closes out the meeting, he talks about like a concept that he wants us to understand, and then a quote. And the concept that week was the fear of confrontation. Because this company's culture is very, you know, actually one of our mottos is, you know, roll shit uphill, don't go sideways. You know, talk to each other and talk it out and deal with the problem. Don't go around your coworkers' back. And as a result, the culture is thriving, right? Because it's like this really dynamic environment where innovation is thriving. I love it. It's amazing. It's really the coolest place I've ever worked. But the thing that he was talking about is, he was like, guys, don't be afraid of confrontation, because here's, and then he did this little diagram. I don't remember all the stuff in it, but it was really cool because it was like, if you don't confront a situation when it comes, he's like, not first of all, not all confrontation is bad. Secondly, when you start to go to the side of confrontation, when you start to go around it or to delay it or to try to avoid it, that's where distrust sets in. And that's where irreparable damage can occur to relationships. And when you were talking about that, I sort of remembered that point because I was like, if we can learn how to talk again, because we don't talk to each other in 240 characters on Twitter. We own each other, right? That's the goal. Right. I gotta own Dr. Pemberton. I can't believe Dr. Pemberton said that. I'm gonna own his ass, right? You know. But then if we're sitting in the same room, we're having a conversation and you disagree and I disagree. Like you said, we can walk away from that friends. We may not if I insult your mother on Twitter.
Exactly. Exactly. Or I can walk away from that and then in social media and then drop back in an hour or a day and jump right back into that. Whereas if you're in my living room and you walk away, well, it's going to take a whole lot more for you to walk back up and knock on my front door and say, can we continue this conversation? You don't necessarily have that option. So you know that in person, I've got to treat people differently than what I do on social media.
Right.
And I think a lot of people believe that they can, that the way I treat people on social media is the standard, not the exception.
Yeah.
And as long as we do that, which is, I think, ultimately what a lot of our politicians are doing as well on both sides of the aisle, when we do that, it kind of festers and fosters that whole idea of, I don't have to show you any basic respect.
Right.
That's the piece that worries me the most about it. It's not, you know, we use the word entitlement. We use the word, not having traumatized or, you know, those things. But the thing that worries me most about a lot of things I see is that basic lack of respect for our fellow human being.
Yeah.
I don't have to like you. I don't have to agree with you. I can think that you're ignorant, an idiot, but when I stop respecting you as a human being, that speaks to a broader sense. And once I objectify one person,
right,
once I lose respect for
easier.
One individual, it does.
Yeah.
I can now objectify. Now everybody is just an object in my life.
Right.
It becomes a whole lot easier to do that.
Oh, they're just a liberal. I'm just going to go ahead and put them all down.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah,
right.
That makes sense.
And full circle, that goes right back into my paradigm. I now reinforce that paradigm of, well, this is how all liberals are.
Mm-hmm.
This is how all conservatives are.
Yeah.
This is how all Catholics, Jews, counselors, podcast hosts, whatever we want to do, this is how they all are.
Right.
And now that we're done.
Yeah. And then we basically lose ourselves in our own ignorance. I think it's a good point. And I'm guilty of it too, because it's so funny, because I will do that kind of stuff on social media, and then I have really good friends that are liberals, you know, and it's like, obviously there's something about their worldview that I respect, not their political view, but there's something about them as a person that I respect. It draws me to them, and I can be friends with them, not because we agree on politics, but because there's other basic principles of life we might agree on. So I will say this. I'll pledge to try to do better except for one thing, Dr. Pemberton. I am not going to stop inventing funny little hashtags for Governor Beshear or the mayor. Hashtag Mayor McBikeLane and hashtag Governor Andy Dad Jeans. That's going to stay around. I'm still sticking with that. But I also think it's a little different when you mock people in power versus when you mock someone who is, you're a citizen, they're a citizen. I think that, you know, our country and democracy is built on sometimes having to mock power when we believe that power is in the wrong. But when we do it to each other, it becomes quite different.
Well, and I will challenge you on that with the idea that, again,
I don't agree with you. You're mean. I'm going to hang up on you.
Right. There you go. Podcast is over. the issue, going back to our words become our reality.
Right.
I think that as we do things, it all depends upon how we do it to people in power.
Sure.
I think that if I challenge a policy, there's no problem.
Yep.
But when I begin to challenge or show disrespect to the person behind it,
right,
that is where that's that proverbial slippery slope.
Right.
If I go and I say, well, I don't agree with President Trump's issues or ideas on this because of.
Right.
But if I say, oh, well, and I don't call him president, or I call him a name, or I'm leading with that whole idea
yeah.
of disrespect right off the bat. And, you know, not to call you out on your hashtags, but that's where, if it's hashtags, if it's a comment about a policy, absolutely.
Sure.
All of our politicians, everyone in power, should always have their policies questioned.
Well, and I actually agree with you. I do agree with you. I think, you know, I would argue that when I've done this, Mayor McBike Lane, for instance, let's dissect it. I'm making fun of the fact that he spends a lot of money on bike lanes. Governor Andy Dad Jeans is the sort of dad style that he's trying to govern the state with. These are commentary through satire of
right.
their governing style. Now, if I said, you know, Governor Ugly Nose, then I'm making fun of him as a person, which
right.
is which I think is wrong and I think is hurtful, and I would never do that. You know, if I started making fun of his personal characteristics or personality quirks or his family or things like that. But I also think that a lot of people are not mature enough to know the difference.
And that is the piece that I agree with. And that is where I go back to, I worry that we've lost that basic level of respect and
yeah.
understanding of knowing I'm questioning a policy versus a person.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I really do. Let's bring this back to our original topic, and that, because I love where we went on this. I think it's all important information, but I want to bring it back to the culture of fear. I think we're right to respect the virus. We were just talking about respect. I think we should respect the virus. I don't think we should fear it. And I think the mask mandates and the incessant long-term lockdowns, once we have hospital capacity and tracing capacity to be able to figure out where this came from and to figure out, you know, to squash, you know, many outbreaks when they happen and to handle them in the hospital, we got to go back and get herd immunity, because it's really the only way to deal with this. And I think we have social media has helped fan the flames of a culture of fear, you know, where it's almost like there's a bully brigade that's going to put you back in your box if you don't wear your mask in the store.
Well, I think I agree with the idea that we need to, again, respect this virus.
Right.
Again, I don't want to say fear for all sorts of reasons. I think we need to respect this. And I think what I see, and again, I know I'm only seeing the people that are loudest, the
right.
people on either end of the continuum. I see people that are, you're right, locked down, don't go out until we have a, you know, till we know what it is and we can identify it immediately. And it's hooked to our smartphones, so I can breathe into my smartphone and know whether I've got it. And okay, that's not going to happen anytime soon. And I see the other side, which is, you know what, doesn't matter. If it's my time, it's my time. Okay, but maybe it's not my dad's time, who,
right,
you
right.
know, is, you know, so I think we see those on either side. I think, again, we have to look at that being respectful of this. And yes, we have to live our lives. I think we have to realize that wearing a mask in public is, there's a difference, again, in wearing a mask in public and infringing upon my rights versus being respectful of yours.
Right.
I would go back to the issue of smoking. I have, you know, if someone wants to go out and smoke outside away from me, fine. I don't think it's a healthy thing to do, but that's your life and your freedom. But when you stand next to me and blow smoke in my face,
right,
that's not okay. And I think here we don't know enough about this virus yet to be able to know where on the continuum it lies. And it becomes, yes, this is an inconvenience for me to wear this mask, but if it helps other people, then maybe I should do it.
Right.
I can drive my car a whole lot faster than 25 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that it protects other people who may run out in traffic. Well, that's not my fault that they run out in traffic, but I know that if I'm driving at 25 versus 45, their chance of survival is that much greater. That's where I think we have to look at how much of this is an inconvenience for me versus saving other people. And that's a hard line to say. I could argue all day long, wearing a mask is no big deal. Come on, people.
Right.
At the same time, when I kill someone's livelihood because they can't work, oh, okay, wait, that's on a different level. Where do we go with that?
Yeah.
You know, that's becomes, you know, when we can't go out of our house at all, if we go down to that totalitarianism of, well, nope, you can't come out of your house at all. Okay, that becomes another level to this.
Yeah.
And those, that's the middle ground. And
yeah,
we have to be able to have those conversations with people and not just shout each other down. Where is that line?
Yeah, I agree with you again. This is weird. Okay, so I think, you know, I wear a mask when I go in the store for the same reason I carry concealed instead of openly my firearm, because I don't want to freak people out.
Okay.
I have seen information on both sides of the mask issue as to whether or not it actually helps or even in some cases could hurt. I have talked to several doctors who have, I believe that we should be exposing ourselves a little bit more in order to build immunity if we have a healthy immune system. However, there is also evidence that if I do have something in my system, like you said, I don't want to be the guy that kills somebody's grandma. Just don't want to
right.
do it. So it's just, to me, until we know otherwise for sure, I'm going to follow those recommendations because I'm a smart, mature human being. I don't mind the government recommending things for me to do in a crisis, and I'm going to follow them for the most part. You know, so I agree with that. And I think that's why people should continue to wear masks when they go to the grocery store. Now, I take mine off as soon as I come out in the open air.
Yep.
But I wear it in the store because I don't want to freak out somebody, and I don't want to have to live with the fact that maybe somebody's grandmother died because I wasn't wearing my mask. And it probably won't happen, but I don't want to think about that, you know. So,
well, and we're pushing this out. You know, it was, first of all, push this out so we don't overwhelm our healthcare industry.
Yeah.
And now the next piece is we're pushing this out, I think, to do we have better treatment options?
Right.
And then finally, it will be, do we push it out to where we have a vaccine? There will always be that pushing it out. Right now, to push it out to our healthcare industry isn't overwhelmed, made total sense to me. I mean,
right.
I'm on board with that fully. I don't want to overwhelm.
Yep.
I want to be able to go to the hospital if something happens. Pushing it out till we have a better treatment idea, well, I really like that idea. I don't know the reality of that and how that's coming. Because again, I want to believe our scientists. I want to believe what it's being told to me, but I don't necessarily.
Right.
I don't know. They're telling me what they want me to hear and what they want me to believe.
Right.
I know that.
Right.
I'm a smart enough. To push this out to, well, we have to wait till a vaccine. Okay, that means that I don't leave my house for
right.
Another year because I know what that is.
Yeah,
right.
At least. So, yeah, that's a great point. Gosh, this has been a great conversation. I always enjoy having you on. I always know it's going to be good. Thanks for taking the time to pop on with us.
Well, I enjoy it as well. It's always a lot of fun. I miss sitting at the fair, the state fair, like we used to do. But it looks like we're not going to necessarily have to worry about it this year.
Yeah.
So
maybe not. Maybe not.
Right.
We'll see. Maybe it'll come together. I hope that there's still a way to have the fair. But anyway,
yes.
Dr. Pemberton, how can folks get a hold of you if they want to check in with you and maybe take care of some issues that they're having?
The best way to reach me is on my website is LouisvilleDFT.com.
Fantastic.
DimensionsFamilyTherapy.com. And my information is all posted there.
All right. Love you, man. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Dr. Charles Pemberton, one of my favorites. He's a good guy, a level-headed guy. We don't always agree on everything. But as you can see, we can have a respectful conversation along those lines. Hey, thanks for listening. Thanks for the continued thousands of downloads that we're getting. I really appreciate every one of you. You can get us on Apple Podcasts, you can get us on Google Play, get us on iHeartRadio, just search The Disruption Zone and we'll be delivered directly to your pocket, which is awesome. And just remember, if you're getting us on Apple Podcasts, please go and just take a couple minutes and just write a review about how great this podcast is. It's helpful to us, and I would certainly appreciate it. You can follow along on at Leland Show on Twitter and at Zone Disruption on Twitter, and also on Instagram. It's at Greatly Londo and at The Disruption Zone. Thanks to my co-executive producer and co-host, Cameron Mills. Thanks to DX Audio Dynamics Productions, DXAudio.com in Lexington. They provide the music for this program. And thank you to you for listening. I'm Leland Conway. I almost said my old radio station. I'm Leland Conway, The Disruption Zone.